Surprise! It's me, Gareth A. Hopkins, the host of the podcast Alpha Podflight, and I've been away for some time for a variety of reasons, mostly laziness. I recorded this podcast with Eamon Clark back in December 2019, I think, before, I don't know, some stuff happened. And you'd think that being locked down would provide me with enough time to edit and release this podcast, but I never got around to it. So here it is. I've listened back to it. It's fine. It's all right. I'm hoping to get the podcast going again. I've got some nebulous plans for that. Nothing solid lined up, but I have bought a new microphone, which I'm talking into now. Hopefully that helps. Since recording this, I've been very busy, as has Eamon. So I'll start with him. He has continued making the Megacity Book Club podcast, and there'll be a link for that in the show notes. And he's also edited the second issue of the DUI compilation, which is Drawn Under the Influence, which was created as part of the Awesome Comics podcast community. And I'll put a link for you to buy a copy of that in the show notes. I did a two-page story in that called Levitating Warbike, about a super spy and his wife trying to help him in his endeavours. And I've been busy as well. I have finally released Explosive Sweet Freezer Razors. You can hear at the end of this podcast, I say that I think it'll be out next year. And it came out 2 months ago, or around then. But it's lovely. It's great. And if you haven't bought a copy yet, then you should consider doing so. And there'll be a link to where you can buy that in the show notes too. I'm going to stop rambling now. You can listen to this episode, and then hopefully there'll be some more in the future. I hope you've been well. And I was going to say I love you, but that's a bit too much. See you on the other side. Bye. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Alpha Podflight, the podcast where every episode I'm joined by a guest and we talk about a single issue of the comic Alpha Flight. This time I'm joined by Eamon. Eamon, could you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yes, hello Gareth, I'm Eamon Clark. I do a podcast, doesn't everybody do a podcast nowadays? I do a podcast called Megacity Book Club, which started out as a 2000 AD podcast, although we're sort of branching out now, and it's like a British comics podcast, I think, is what we're sort of doing. But check out episodes 20 and episodes 107, which had a certain Gareth A. Hopkins as a guest.
That's right, yeah.
Discussing two very peculiarly British comics, one called Indigo Prime and one called Revere, which in a way couldn't be further from Alpha Flight. But yeah, there you go.
No, they are different ends of the spectrum, comic, like action comics wise. So I don't know what the common factor is in my interest in them, but that's probably for a psychiatrist to diagnose rather than a podcast. Although, as you say, everyone's got a podcast, so maybe there's something in that in terms of everyone needing a psychiatrist.
Everybody needs a bit of talking therapy about these comics that mean so much to us.
Well, because I don't know about you, but my wife is not that interested in me constantly breaking down pages for her. So,
no, mine neither.
Right, so we're here today to talk about Alpha Flight number 27, which is dated October of, and I'm reading it in trade, so I haven't got, 1985, going by the signature on the cover.
Yep, that's right.
It's called Betrayal. John Byrne is on story and art. Keith Williams was the inking assist. Andy Yankus on the colouring. Rick Parker lettering. Denny O'Neill was the editor, or Dennis O'Neill. I think it's Dennis, isn't it? Why have I been calling him Denny?
Well, he's credited as Dennis, but I think he still sort of does his editorials as Denny, doesn't he, I think?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, he signs the letters page as Denny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm not wrong, at least, for once. And Jim Shooter is the editor-in-chief. So if you want to give us... So we're nearing the end of John Byrne's run here. So I think this is his penultimate issue before. Is 29 his last, or
not far
28,
off.
28, I think, and then he does the sort of Hulk crossover, I think.
With, yeah, so that, and that's where Bill Mantlo and him swap on, yes, 29. But yeah, so if you'd like to give us a run through of what happens in this, have you read the issues either side? Because it's part of a.
I have, yes. I've got sequence, the big, yeah. I've got the big omnibus, which is a huge volume.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, but I've also got the single issue of 27 in front of me as well, which is fun because, of course, it's got all the ads in it, which is delightful. But yeah,
I've got that upstairs, but just the way that I've managed to arrange my life makes it difficult to get to. So luckily, I've on my shelf, I've got the trade paperbacks that I put out a few years ago. Yeah.
So this is one that you can almost judge by the cover, because the cover almost tells the whole story. It's got a robot wearing Guardian's costume on the front cover, holding Snowbird up by the throat and telling Shaman that he's got a choice between saving his daughter or saving Snowbird, which is going to be like the conclusion of this issue. Inside, it's the second part of a sort of battle that's going on with Omega Flight, and it takes place in the real world West Edmonton shopping mall, which at the time, I gather, was the biggest shopping mall in the world, which I think they tell you a couple of times in both issues.
There's not as much sort of Canada trivia in this one, but I know in the previous one, I think that's the one that we did with Phil, when we started, there's a lot of description of stats on the Edmonton Mall, but yes,
so the sense of place, we're definitely in Canada. Omega Flight have sort of defeated half of Alpha Flight, and of course this is because Guardian, who had come back to the comic famously, of course, you know, spoilers for 1985. Famously, of course, Guardian was dead, and he'd come back to the comic, and there was a big mystery about how he'd come back from the dead. And in the last issue, of course, it's revealed that not only is it a character called Delphine Courtney, who was actually inhabiting the Guardian suit, but she's a robot as well. Great name, Delphine Courtney. Sounds like she's either got two surnames or two forenames. I can't, first names.
And I'm never sure which way around it is either, if it's Courtney Delphine.
That's exactly my problem. I couldn't work out whether she was Courtney Delphine or Delphine Courtney. I think she's Delphine Courtney. Anyway, so she is the robot, and she has, with Omega Flight, defeated half of Alpha Flight, and then she tortures Talisman in order to send out a psychic distress signal to her father, Shaman. Is he Shaman? Shaman? Shaman, anyway.
I always say Shaman.
We'll stick with that.
I think we had Anthony on the other day, who is from Canada, and he says Shaman.
Okay, right.
Depends how colonial you are, maybe. Right.
So anyway, unfortunately I'm not. But yes. So her father gets the distress signal. So the rest of Alpha Flight turn up. And it looks like it's going to be a great punch-up between, you know, Alpha Flight and Omega Flight again. But Delphine Courtney, still masquerading as Guardian, steals Shaman's magical medicine pouch. Because he wants to rescue—is it Smart Alec?
Smart Alec.
From the who apparently has disappeared into the medicine pouch in a previous issue, and because he can't find him, he does the thing you're not supposed to do, which is turn it inside out, and releases the void, which is quite marvelous. We'll talk about that a bit later on, but so. Delphine Courtney has released the void from the medicine pouch. The rest of Omega Flight take one look at this and decide this is above their pay grade, and they all clear off. So that means Shaman and Talisman have to rescue the rest of Alpha Flight from the void. So Talisman has to go into the void while Shaman is, I think, guiding her from outside.
That's right, yeah.
And then, of course, it's going to lead up to this dreadful sort of conclusion cliffhanger where the robot Delphine Courtney has got Snowbird and is, I guess, basically sort of like throttling her.
Yeah.
And then he gives gives Sharman the choice. You either save Snowbird or you save your daughter from the void. Mm. And that leads up to the end of the issue because it all doesn't go terribly well, obviously.
No.
And that will lead on, I think, to the next issue, which was the Secret Wars crossover, or Secret Wars 2 crossover with the Beyonder.
Yeah, so I think this scene appears in Secret Wars 2.
Right.
And where I've got it in trade, I've got like the 3.5-page sequence where Beyonder turns up and saves everybody.
Right.
And then they recap that in issue 28.
Right.
As well, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just Snowbird, how do Snowbird's powers work? Shouldn't she be able to transform anyway? I mean, I know
Yeah. She should be. I don't know.
That she can't transform while the robot sort of dangling her in midair. But you know.
Yeah, I mean, she shouldn't. Snowbird is a powerful character, and so she wouldn't be helpless. But I suppose as a plot device, that's how it works. And she's also confused. She didn't even know that Guardian had come back from the dead. So
yeah.
Maybe that's where the weakness is. But yeah, it's left on a proper cliffhanger. I should imagine that if you're reading this monthly, then it would have had a fair amount of impact, actually. Especially the look on Sharman's face in that last big panel.
Yes.
He's genuinely distraught. I think he's realised for once that he's made an actual mistake.
Yes. That's right. And he's a guy who carries around a certain amount of guilt with him about his mother. Or no, about his wife.
His wife, rather. Yeah.
Yes, Talisman's mother. About how he failed her and now how he's failing his daughter as well. So it's a real sort of husband and father thing going on for him. As you say, he's genuinely wrecked at the end of this issue.
Yeah.
By it all. Yeah.
And what's interesting is the counterpoint to that is when he is, because he sends Talisman into the void. She's not sure. She says, "I don't really think that's a good idea." And he's like, "No, no, no. You go in. I'll be outside. Excuse me. Everything's going to be fine." And then also the look on his face. So he's outside, sort of stroking this abstract void.
Yes.
With a very sort of satisfied look on his face, very calm. He's totally in control. A bit smug, almost. And then to see the break there, because even down to when he's been told it's either Snowbird or Talisman, he's still very casual about, "Oh, I'll do both."
Yes.
He reaches into the void, grabs out this sort of mass of biological matter. I'm not sure what it is.
A swamp bomb. It's a plant missile. Yeah.
But yeah, so that's a pretty succinct rundown of the issue. The one thing that there's a couple of bits in here that also happened. So that's the main plot. We've also got the sort of seed plot for the next issue, which is where Sharman Sasquatch, who is currently trapped in the Box robot, his mind has been trapped in there, and Roger Box have come up with a super secret plan to grab a body from another dimension for Walter Langowski to move back into.
Yeah.
All sorts of fantastic machines here.
Yes, absolutely fantastic machinery. And he's tapped into some sort of... Roger Box has tapped into some sort of a dimensional nexus, a crossroads of realities.
Yeah. Which Sharman recognises straight away, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
He knows exactly
what
it is.
First year at medical school. Yeah.
But then they see the outline shadow of a figure of humanoid, virtually no brainwave pattern, and built like a brick shipyard.
Must be a Canadian expression.
Yeah. It's quite obviously shaped like the Hulk. So I don't... Maybe it's just us as comic readers, we can tell that.
Yes.
But, naivety on the part of Alpha Flight there.
Yes.
Not been doing their homework.
There's a big hulking brute we can put Walter's brain into, or brought Walter's, mind into, yeah.
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 And we know how that goes.
Yes.
I do. I don't know if you do. So yeah, there's that. So that's a rundown of the comic. Is there anything in particular that you like about this issue?
So there's a couple of things. I remember the X-Men comics of the 70s and 80s, when, of course, Claremont and Byrne were turning out these great stories. And what I remember particularly about those stories, I may get this wrong, but what I remember would be that the X-Men would fight usually the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, and it would usually happen in a real-world location, like a shopping mall or a Capitol building or something like that. And the X-Men would be being pretty rubbish because they were not fighting as a team, or they were all going through some personal crises. And then usually in the second issue, they'd get their sort of get them pull themselves together. Colossus would throw Wolverine at somebody usually, and then they'd scrape out a draw, and everybody would withdraw and go home and lick their wounds. And
yeah.
Senator Kelly would go on television and make a speech about the mutant menace again.
Yeah.
And then next issue it would be a Danger Room episode or something like that, or Kitty Pryde being in trouble with some alien in the mansion or something like that.
Yeah.
And what I liked here was that this was, in a way, it was very similar. They've got this real-world location, the West Edmonton Mall. They've got, you know, Alpha versus Omega. And it's shaping up to be a sort of a punch-out or a fight between the two teams. And then, of course, as you say, it gets diverted into this other plot about the Void and about Shaman and Talisman. And the dreadful decisions that he's got to make. So yeah. That's all good fun, actually. I quite liked all that. I love all that real-world location, and I love two teams coming together. And it reminded me, as I say, of those sort of great X-Men comics that I used to read back in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is sort of in a way where, you know, John Byrne comes from, you know. That's where I guess he made his big break, isn't it? Before he goes on to Fantastic Four,
yeah.
And then this.
I've said it elsewhere, but sometimes it feels like Alpha Flight is John Byrne trying to show how he would do X-Men.
Yes.
Yeah.
The interesting thing, because I know we've talked about this, was because I was reading these back in the day. I was picking these up in the 80s. And I had always assumed that it was a passion project for John Byrne. In fact, I actually, for ages, I thought he was Canadian.
Yeah.
I know he's, what would you call him now? British-American, isn't he? He's born in Warsaw.
He is now. Yes. Yeah. So, but it's complicated because I didn't think he was Canadian. But he was born in England and then moved to Canada, and he spent most of his life there. Up until, I think, he moved to America in his early 20s, and now he's American, but he grew up Canadian, if that makes
okay.
sense.
So I always thought this was his passion project. This was the one he really wanted to do, Alpha Flight.
Yeah.
And, we didn't have the internet, but we did have comics about comics. So particularly there was a comic called Amazing Heroes, and they would do interviews with big name creators. And I seem to remember, I mean, obviously they were sort of promotional pieces for their comics. So I guess none of the creators would say, actually, I don't want to do this comic. I've been held over a barrel. So they would talk it up. And I seem to remember, you know, reading that this was John Byrne's thing. It was going to be his project, what he really wanted to do.
Yeah.
But of course, listening to your podcast, I find that might not necessarily be completely true, although the truth is complicated with John Byrne, isn't it?
It is very complicated. So, and the reason that this came up is that Thought Bubble, we talked about briefly, and I had been lucky enough to talk to Jim Shooter briefly at MCM and asked him about Alpha Flight, just in sort of broad terms. But the story he spun was that he couldn't remember whether it was him or John who wanted to do it, because I've been telling everyone that Jim Shooter had made John Byrne do it. He didn't want to do it, but if he wanted to do Fantastic Four, then he had to do it. And there's some sort of payoff, and it's a bit acrimonious. But speaking to Jim Shooter, first of all, he barely remembered it. It wasn't something that he was that fussed about talking about, I don't think. But also, Yeah, he seemed to remember it being John Byrne's project. And I think the reason that it is tricky is that John seems to have a habit of rewriting his own history. We've had someone was kind enough to record a panel he did where he talked about Alpha Flight, and he seemed a bit warmer to the characters there, but certainly in previous interviews he's done, he's been sort of anti-Alpha Flight, and has felt burdened by the fact that he made them and people have opinions about them. And he's also said that he doesn't think that anybody in Marvel is canon, like official canon, unless they were made by Stan and Jack, and I think he gave dispensation to Steve Ditko, who we'll talk about in a minute, I'm sure.
So
it's tricky to pick that apart, and I keep forgetting half the stuff I learn. Bear in mind how much time I spend with Alpha Flight. Coming back to this issue, I had to go and read the others to work out what was going on.
Yeah.
So, so who knows? All I can say is that on the page, he looks like he's enjoying himself.
Yes. Yeah, he does. And as you say, this may be his version of what the X-Men would have been under his control. And when you say he's enjoying himself, let's talk about the other really good thing that I liked here, which is the artistic choices he makes. Mm-hmm. And it's not so much, his figure work and his sort of superheroes. It's when he depicts the Void that I get quite excited about this issue.
Yeah.
Because, so he has to depict this sort of weird, I don't know what you'd call it, biomystical, almost machinery thing erupting around the characters. And for some reason, you know, comics always remind me of other comics, so this reminds me of, I don't know if you know Frank Miller's comic Ronin from the 80s.
I'm sort of familiar with it. I haven't read it, but I'm familiar with it. Yeah,
so there's a sort of mixture of organic and machinery in that, which is slowly, there's this sort of industrial complex at the heart of it, which expands over the four issues, and some of the work with the Void expanding around all the characters reminded me of that. It had this sort of Frank Miller-ish feel to it.
Yeah.
But then, of course, on the next couple of pages, what happens, as we say, is that Talisman has to go into the Void, and then we get, you've mentioned Stan and Jack. We get something like the Fantastic Four issues where Reed and Ben would always be exploring the negative zone, I think it was.
Yeah.
And they'd, you know, one of them would get lost or whatever and have to be pulled out by the thing. But there's also, you've mentioned Steve Ditko, and it's like those Doctor Strange issues.
Those are the ones that I was thinking of when I read it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was always, you know, journeying through magical planes. Something they did a bit in the movie version as well. But, you know, and so it's like that. You've got Byrne doing this sort of weird mystical planes. I don't know what you'd call them. They're sort of like magical realms and this ghostly talisman sort of flying through them. And I thought that's all great stuff.
Yeah. And it reminds me of the issue that we did previously with Steve, which was about when they went into the underworld. What was that? 24, I think.
Oh, right.
Where John Byrne uses similar art styles. That sort of scratchy, not scratchy, but that sort of semi biomechanical. He uses a similar form of inking to create detail and shape in that. Which is actually, it's sort of reminiscent of early Carlos Esquerra. The way that he shaded stuff by doing lots of lines which outline the shape of an object. There's a little bit there. But no, I love it. And obviously it sort of harkens back to some of my work, not intentionally, but some of how I think about pages and stuff. It's certainly back when I started, it's similar to that. And I love the fact that it's when the bag first gets turned inside out, he's drawn it like a pane of glass shattering.
Yeah.
And then it just, the outside of the Void is that occurring over and over and over again, whereas on the inside it's a lot more curvy, and it's very like 1960s sort of what's the word I'm looking for, like head,
yes, trippy,
head shop stuff,
isn't it?
Trippy, yeah,
yeah, yeah. So I'm looking at page 12 where the robot guardian, who is Delphine Courtney or whatever, as you say, she, it's like that panel is like, as you say, the glass is broken, and you've got Aurora, who's the first one to be trapped by it, and of course, and she has to say sapristi just to remind us that she's French-Canadian, because that, I think she has to do that, you know, contractually every fourth page or something like that. And then pages 16 and 17 are where Talisman is in the void, and that's great. That's, as you say, I can see that in your comics, actually, in some of your abstractions. So that's fantastic stuff. And I've just flipped to 24 in the omnibus, and it goes all black and white, doesn't it?
20.
At least it does in mine. This is the
in
the
underworld. No, it is, yeah.
And it's
that's
beautifully
right.
shaded. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I loved all that about this issue. I loved the big punch up in a real world location. And then I loved the artwork when it goes all trippy and weird. And it is very, it does, I think, reference all those 60s comics, you know. Fantastic Four and the Negative Zone, but particularly Doctor Strange and his mystical planes, wherever he was going.
Yeah. Other things that I like, it, there's one short scene where we see Snowbird, because she left previously, it says here, in issue 24, they defeated all the great beasts, so she went into retirement and snuck off with Doug. So we see them in his little house, and when she feels hears the call, she latches onto Talisman's distress call. But what's most noticeable here is her hairline.
It's terrible.
It is creepy.
Yes.
So instead of eyebrows, she's got a hairline.
Yes. So her hair seems to just start on her forehead, literally just above her eyes. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a bit weird.
I don't like that.
I don't know how that happened. If that was the Inca or the colorist, but it's very strange, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm not sure if she's always, because when she's like been in her alter ego of what's her name, Anne, I think that's what she calls herself.
Yeah, she works for hairline's... the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, doesn't she?
That's right. And I don't think her hairline has been that pronounced. Low down before. I suppose it's because she's supposed to be half animal, half goddess. I don't know. But yeah, it's particularly disturbing here.
Okay. I mean, there's a couple of things that bother me about Snowbird. One is why she can't escape from Delphine at the end of the issue.
Yep.
Why she can't transform when she's been held by the neck. Does she have to speak to transform? I don't know.
No, I don't think it. No, well, because when she turns into a bear, she doesn't speak to untransform, does she?
So she doesn't transform then? It's just plot convenience. And then the other thing that puzzles me is why she has a secret identity, other than, you know, we know that all superheroes have to have a secret identity or a real world identity. They have to be journalists or police officers or, you know, something, teachers or doctors, you know, I suppose, in the case of Shaman. But, you know, if she's some sort of mystical guardian of the North, I don't understand why she spends time working as a police officer.
And it only causes her problems in her life
exactly.
as well.
Exactly. So, it only seems to cause trouble.
So, no, I'm not sure either. Snowbird is my... she's some people's favourite character.
Oh, right.
That's fair enough on them. But I've never really warmed to her.
Right. And then her hairline is really creepy.
Just adds to it, yeah. So that, yeah. Snowbird, but she doesn't really have, other than being bait, she hasn't got a major role to play in this. Nor do most of the other Alpha Flight characters, because they're unconscious for most of it. Puck and... Oh, there's that really awful, excellent panel where when Shaman... teleports himself and the others into the mall, and the fake guardian meets them and points the other side of the mall. At what page am I looking at? Page number 10.
Yeah.
He says, oh, they're over there. And it's actually Omega Flight holding their unconscious bodies up.
It looks really terrible, doesn't it?
It's a bit suspect, yeah. But yeah, so they, other than, because they've all been drugged as well, other than Talisman, we find out has been drugged, but they've all been knocked out and they're all, unavailable. There's also, the other thing, there's a few like little, the scene where we are learning about Box and, well, both Boxes. Yeah. So Walter and Boxes work with dimensional fishing, I guess we call it.
Yeah.
Is there's a scene where Sharman is fixing Aurora's broken ribs.
Oh yes, yeah. Who was broken in a sort of battle with some military robots in the last issue, I think, wasn't it?
That's right, because of Guardian's poor battle.
Yes.
Which he's never noted for when he was alive, but now that he's a robot, he's even worse. But yeah, it's just a funny pose. I think if it wasn't for the dialogue, you'd wonder what was happening, I think, with him using the way he's got his hands positioned and the way that she's sat is borderline dodgy, I think.
Yeah, it's a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah. So that's something that's always stuck out to me.
And I'm going to call into question his medicine as well at that point. Speaking as a doctor, you don't do that to ribs. But anyway, yes. And in the next panel, she calls Walter Sherry, just to, as I say, for contractual obligations, you know.
Yes.
She will say something French every third or fourth panel.
Yeah. But she seems delighted that these three men have gone to all this effort just to... Roger phrase it? He says Walter is... would like to be... And of course, being a very... physical person, Mr. Langowski is not happy inside Box. So yeah, there's always been that undercurrent with Walter that he likes having his body around. And obviously Aurora is delighted at the fact they've gone to all this effort, essentially for her. What else? I'm sure there's other things. Was there anything about this that you didn't like? We mentioned Snowbird being a plot device.
Yes. So the only other thing that really stood out to me when, you know, going back and reading this is the problem with comics at this time was they had this, you know, it's oft repeated that every comic was somebody's first issue.
Mm.
So you've got to catch up the readers every month on exactly who everybody is, what their powers are, what their relationships are, what happened in the last issue. And so some of the panels of dialogue or some of the speech bubbles of dialogue, really, you just think, gosh, you know, you could cut that back, Mr. Byrne. I mean, I wonder about other comics of the time, and I'm thinking particularly because I've been rereading Alan Moore's Saga of the Swamp Thing, and he and his artists get away with so much less in the way of recaps in each issue. They just assume that people will figure it out, whereas because in the, you know, here in the sort of second page we get that panel that goes across two pages at the top, where the robot is introducing Omega Flight, introducing Alpha Flight that they've just defeated at the same time, telling everybody how they did it. And it just, and it's, you know, it's a bit like that. And then again, when you get to that scene with Box and Walter and Aurora, and Walter Box says, "Just to recap for you." And then he has, I think, six speech bubbles where he sort of, you know. So that stuff really got to me, actually, when I was rereading.
Right.
It's like, gosh, you know, there was a lot of words in those days.
Yeah, but I mean, it's interesting hearing you say that, knowing how much Dread you would have read in 2000 AD, especially the 70s and 80s, where they were recapping every four or five pages.
This is true, yes.
And after what one, if you read something in like that in trade, you just sort of get used to the rhythm, and you don't notice it. But for the first, when you pick up one of those old 2000 AD collections for the first time in a while, it takes a little bit to get used to them, especially with John Wagner, like specifically saying what's happening. And until you're in tune with that, it can be a bit. And I suppose because this is the sort of stuff that I've been reading a lot, and especially because I came into this issue, I came in cold, essentially. I hadn't picked it up for a year at least, and it's felt like a very long year. And it actually helped me to sort of work out what was going on. I found it really useful. So, yeah, and but I do understand people's reservations about the way that they recap constantly. But I suppose if I was to compare it to more recent comics, especially for Marvel and stuff, where essentially writing for the trades, they'll write 4 or 5 issues knowing that it'll be collected up to be resold together. If you were to come into one of those 4 or 5 issues in, then you'd have no idea what was going on. And certainly I've found that, where I've picked up the odd thing because the cover looks nice, and it's been almost impossible to catch up.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you're probably right about the comparison between John Wagner then and John Wagner now. You know, as I say, if I went back and read the Dreads, they'd be full of recaps and people explaining how his guns work and how the different rounds work and how the, you know, Mega City lore works.
Oh, well, yeah, because every time he went to change ammo, they'd have to explain that he had 6 types of ammo.
Exactly, yes. Whereas now, you know, when John Wagner writes Dread, or in fact even Rob Williams writing Dread on, say, The Small House or something like that, and you get very little backstory or exposition in that sort of sense. You just get, you know, this is what's happening, bang, you're in.
And also, not to turn this into a Judge Dredd podcast, but they don't explain how Dredd's feeling very often. Like, they might say that he likes somebody or doesn't, but they'll just let him be in the panel with other things happening around him, and you'll know how he feels. I think the one exception to that, which I still laugh about when I think about, is when he wants to kill the sensitive Clegg, where he's willing to pack it all in just to be able to murder sensitive Clegg.
If you speak again, I will kill you. So I know. I mean, you know, that was something I noticed. You know, I'm just flicking through it now. I just love the ads. It's great to have the original issue, isn't it? And you get a letters page as well. And of course, the letters page announced, you've got Denny O'Neill announcing, big announcement, John Byrne is leaving Alpha Flight. So this is when readers at the time, because I think I only went up to issue 12 in Alpha Flight in the 80s, for obvious reasons, you know. I mean, you know, you've covered those. I remember all the house ads were running at the time saying something big's going to happen in Alpha Flight 12.
One shall surely die.
Exactly. Like
who's going to survive this?
So I mean, that was a big thing. I remember that. But yeah, looking at the Transformers ads from the 1980s and the letters page is great. But yeah, the artistic choices, the art in there is lovely. The Void stuff.
Yes. And also, Byrne's figure work as well. It's so solid.
Yes. Yeah.
I especially like it when characters are entering or exiting the Void. In particular, there's one at the bottom of page 18 where the members of Alpha Flight are being sort of ejected like horizontally out of the Void.
Yeah.
And they're all at slightly... The perspective on it is really interesting because they're coming out of a circle, do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And so they're not... Yeah, and there's and the way that they cut off the figures in line with the surface of that object... I just really like how he deals with the figures in this. And that solid sort of the compositions and also the figure work means that when he does sort of take it to another extreme with the Void stuff, both external and internal when Talisman is floating around inside. It's actually two pages, but it has such a big impact.
Yeah.
It means that he can get away with that, and it's not, you can tell that it's a conscious decision to draw like that.
Yeah. That is lovely as they're emerging. It is interesting. I mean, I know you've said this, that Alpha Flight's a book about a team who rarely actually work as a team. And most of Alpha Flight in this issue are actually literally reduced to mannequins. I mean, they're even posed, obviously, by Omega Flight. But and here they are, just like they're just Puck and North Star and Heather are just sort of being ejected by the void. But this wonderfully composed panel, as you say, at the bottom of the page. Yeah, it's great stuff. And then the next one, you get a great explosion on the next page. So,
yeah.
What a fantastic sound effect.
Okay. I think it sounds like we have done talking. I just want to swing quickly back round to Sharman, because this issue is very much about him and how he deals with issues, and whether or not, I can't remember if he learns very much from this. Certainly his approach to making decisions changes over the next few years, and he realizes that maybe he's a terrible decision maker. But there is something, as I said at the start of the podcast, there's something affecting about how distraught he is. He's spent, other than when we first are introduced to him and he's grieving over his wife and abandons his daughter to go and learn how to be the shaman. I think this is the first time we've seen him really emote and be affected by what's happening around him. Because he's always quite aloof. He's got a smug cockiness about him. And part of that comes from, because he's in tune with nature, and obviously he knows where the nexus points of reality are. That's something that he's just with. But to have that broken down and for him to be really human again, I think is a nice change. Unfortunately, that gets totally turned on its head by the Beyonders turning up and fixing everything for them. But
yeah, what's the answer? Beyonder did it. Yeah, Wizards did it, or the Beyonder. How are we going to fix this? Beyonder, Beyonder, Beyonder.
Yeah. But I think that's me done about this, unless you have anything else you wanted to talk about.
No, just the fact that I think the other thing about Sharman is that we have, thanks to Anthony, I think we've drifted to calling him Sharman rather than Shaman or anything else.
I might switch backwards and forwards between episodes.
Absolutely,
so people get my own little rhythm going.
So that's it. Okay. What's that? Issue 27. Yeah,
penultimate. Issue 27.
Burn.
And I keep losing count of which episode this is of my own podcast.
Oh, right.
Because I've had so many Alpha Not Flights sort of shuffled in with them, and we've also talked about comics which aren't Alpha Flight. I'm either on 40. This is either 45 or 46, maybe. It's more podcasts than I thought I would have recorded, but there we go. You're up to a lot now, aren't you? 100?
110 will be out shortly. Yes, of the City Book Club, I think, is the next one out, which is about a comic called Kingdom of the Wicked.
I don't think I've heard of that one.
Ah, right, it's a good one.
Yeah. Is that one of the older ones?
So it's not like 2000 AD directly, it's Ian Edginton and Matt Disraeli Brooker who do Scarlet Traces. And this was an independent comic they did called Kingdom of the Wicked.
Okay. Was that the fairy one? Did it make an appearance in the prog? Or am I imagining
I don't that? Think it's been in the prog at all. Okay. It's the one about a chap who's a children's author. Mm. And he starts having these terrible sort of headaches. And he is, when he falls into comas or falls asleep, he's transported into a fantasy world that he created in his mind when he was a kid.
Right.
And this is the first time he's gone back to it, and it's sort of like the fantasy world has all gone to hell in a handcart while he's been away, sort of. So,
okay.
Yeah. But that will be episode 110 of Mega City Book Club, which will be out just before Christmas, if you're listening to this in 2019.
Okay, excellent. So Amazing City Book Club, they can just find that in their local podcast.
Yes, app. You'll find it wherever you find Alpha Flight or Alpha Pod Flight in your podcatcher, the Megacity Book Club. Yeah. The website is megacitybookclub.com. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram. And if anybody wants to come on a British comic book podcast and talk about a book, for instance, if somebody wanted to come on and talk about the 1983-2000 AD sci-fi special, which features John Byrne's, I think, only British work.
Dread appearance. Yeah,
yeah, drawing Dread. So, you know, if somebody wants to pick that and come on and talk about it, please do. John Byrne, drawing Dread. Again, I think something that John Byrne has since sort of been rather dismissive about it. He felt it wasn't a great story, unfortunately.
No, and I get the impression that he likes British comics and likes the Judge Dredd character, so if he didn't feel that he did a good job, maybe that's why he's a bit dismissive of it.
I think he really wanted to do it. He apparently he did petition to do it, so you know. Yeah,
yeah.
Okay, so okay. That's megacitybookclub.com, and I'll stop plugging it now.
No, that's fine, this is the plug section. Yep. And where can people find you on Twitter if you'd want them to?
MCBC podcast, because I couldn't fit Megacity Book Club in there, but if you search Megacity Book Club, you'll find it. Yeah, it's MCBC podcast, and the Gmail is mcbcpodcast@gmail.com.
Perfect. Thank you. That's all right. If anybody wants to find me on the internet, I'm on Twitter as @grthink, and my website is @grthink.com. As we're recording now, we're sort of mid-December-y, and I'm taking a break from comics because I've had a very busy few months. But the project I'm working up to, Explosive Sweet Freezer Razors, will be out hopefully sometime next year if I can get pace going, but we'll see how that goes. And people can buy my comics from the internet. They're quite easy to find if you try. Thank you very much for joining me, Eamon. This has been really fun.
Thank you for having me. I hope it was okay.
No, it was brilliant. It's nice to go back to the John Byrne ones. I think this is the first John Byrne we've done in a while, because we've been talking about Bill Mantlow and some of the later issues.
Still waiting for you to get to that Bill Mantlow Puck issue.
Well, no, I mentioned this on the previous episode. I gave it to my friend at work and said I really like, because I think she'd have some interesting opinions on it. But she never read it. She's got no interest in coming on the podcast. But she never gave the comic back either. So I'll find someone to come on and talk about it, because I think after the death of Guardian, it's probably the thing that comes up most in conversations about Alpha Flight.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, thank you again, and hopefully people will come back the next time I have someone on to talk about Alpha Flight on another exciting episode of Alpha Pod Flight. Thank you and goodbye.